her, and welcome to the Healing of Agape this week. Boy, what a treat I have for you. I have Alex Merklinger with us today. Hello, Alex. How are you?
Eva, how are you? I'm doing fine, thanks.
How honored am I to have the guest of the Almighty Mysteries of the Mind with me today? My favorite show.
Is it really?
Yeah, yeah, aside from my own, of course.
Well, of course. But you actually listen to that, huh?
Absolutely. Don't you see me in your chat room all the time?
Yes, I do, and I get calls from you, too. I think that's great.
That's right.
Yeah.
So tell me, Alex, I've been dying to know, because I've never had a chance to talk to you about it. Tell me about those mind control things that you've worked on.
Well, my gosh, I started even way back when I was about 15 years old, and which is a long time ago. The Civil War had just ended, and I knew that there was a way to alter a person's state of consciousness. So I at 15, I studied the hypnosis. And I became so good at it, I used to work with doctors and teach them, you know, how to use hypnosis on their patients. Then I started to make what are referred to today as behavior modification tapes or self-hypnosis tapes. Because there were things I wanted to do. I wanted to increase my memory and, you know, all that stuff. And then, golly, about 1965 or so, I had been with another company, and I had a partner. We were off in a lot of different things. His name is Jim Hearn. And we came across a fellow by the name of Jose Silva down in Laredo, Texas, without getting into the whole story. But we flew down there and talked to Jose because he was on the same track that we were, searching for the same things. And at the time, Jose, his business was he was a radio and TV repairman. So we sat down and we kind of put together a program. Jim and I had been in a company called Holiday Magic, which was one of the first really successful multi-level marketing programs. And we put together and brought in the first, I think it was like 36 of our top distributors, and we trained them to be teachers of what was then, we called it Silva Mind Control, out of deference to Jose. And Jim took from Chicago West, I took from Chicago East. And that's really, Eva, that started this whole New Age movement back in the mid-1966, something like that.
Are you serious that far back?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I could tell you, and if I could go back, I could tell you the exact day it started, because we had been teaching. In this case, I had 17 other instructors that worked for me. And we used to go to all these little cities and little towns in the Northeast primarily, although I had some of the teachers down in Florida and what have you. And finally, I brought them all together, and I said, hey, look, you know, this is silly. We've got to expand this. Remember, nobody had ever heard of these concepts before.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, of course, New York is the Big Apple. And I said, who wants to go to New York? And everyone said, oh, we're not going to go there. We're not going to go there. And I said, okay, I'll tell you what, I'll go there. But I never want to hear you complain about it. And I went down to the bank the next day, and I mortgaged my house 100%. And I took two ads and put them in the Sunday Times, New York Times, rented the grand ballroom of the Ambassador Hotel, which at that time was above Grand Central Station, for a Wednesday lecture. And I used to charge $5 for people to come and hear me, because I always said, hey, I'm as good as any movie or show they could go to. And then I used to walk out. And at the time, I had one person who would sit at the desk. It was a little cardboard, and collect $5 and let people fill out a 3x5 card. So I went out, because I hated to wait. I'd get so nervous. And I walked around, you know, that part of Manhattan, and came back. And as I'm walking down Park Avenue towards Grand Central Station, and it didn't dawn on me at the time, I saw a line of people, four abreast, all the way down 42nd Street and then up and around Lexington Avenue. I said, excuse me, pardon me, and I walked in into Grand Central Station, and this line of four across went all the way up the stairs into the main lobby of the Ambassador Hotel. And I had to go up another flight of stairs to the Grand Ballroom, and all the way up, all these people. And I get to the vestibule of the Grand Ballroom, and it's so packed you couldn't move, and I happened to see two cops standing there because they were just huge. And I figured, oh, geez, now what? And I walked over and I said, are you doing this? And I said, yeah. He says, you got to get rid of these people. There are too many people here. So I told everyone, come back tomorrow night. And we turned away easily 2,000 to 3,000 people.
Oh, my God.
I walked in the grand ballroom. It was so packed that there was no place to walk or stand. They were sitting on the floors, all the chairs standing up around the wall. I walked up to my blackboard, and I had my chart there. And the people were so close, I couldn't even move. And I said, you got to get back. And then I started my lecture. And that, I always say, was the first night of what is known as the New Age movement, because it blew people's minds.
What did you teach, Alex?
Well, primarily what we did back in those days, we taught people how to function consciously within an altered state of consciousness, meaning going into the subconscious mind, going into some today, I mean, it's people that meditate and people that pray a lot go into the same levels.
Mm-hmm.
We also got into concepts called physical readings, which no one had heard of before. Edgar Cayce used to do it. That was about it. And I always had a guarantee. If you can't do a physical reading to your satisfaction, I'll give you your money back. And I never had anyone ask for the money back. And I,
now, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, personally, I've taught about 55,000 people over the years, and I guess with my other instructors, because I stayed, and we used to argue all the time, Jim and Jose and myself. So finally I left, and I revamped the program and advanced it quite a bit, and it was called Mind Development. And then I had 27 instructors all over the world that used to teach with me.
Now, did this involve, do you teach remote viewing?
Well,
how does that work exactly?
Yeah, okay. As a matter of fact, this was the forerunner or the beginning of remote viewing, because what remote viewing is really is you are basically doing a reading on something, except that in our physical readings we carried a lot further. And there was a fellow by the name of Ingo Swann who went out to California, went out to Stanford Research, and started to put together the initial programs with the government in the whole concepts of remote viewing.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
How were, did cohesion have something to do with that, cohesion of your electromagnetic field? I would imagine that it would.
Describe to me what that means to you.
How, you know, if your electromagnetic field is stretched out, your thoughts are going to be more scattered and less, you're less able to focus, less able to make decisions. You're going to not be as aware of who you are and more aware of the things simply in physical reality. So it's basically bringing in and tightening up your electromagnetic field.
Well, okay. I mean, looking at it the way you're describing it, yes, I would say that's probably right. But what we do by going into these altered states, and basically, and I'm sure you know, basically you have four levels of brain rhythm, which show up on an EEG machine, electroencephalograph.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the beta state, which is the outer conscious state. It's also the state of the greatest amount of dissipation of energy. Then you have the altered states, or going into these altered states, these deeper levels of awareness. The first is the alpha state, which today everybody knows of because, you know, people get into these states by praying or meditating or what have you. But when we started, I used to argue with doctors and scientists on radio and television. They said, well, you can't teach a person how to go into an alpha state. And I said, I can do it every day.
Give me an example. What would you do for the listeners out there that want to try this? What would they do?
Well, the only way that I am aware that a person can learn how to do it correctly and get all of the mental exercises is find a program that is being taught. Go take the program, and you go through a series, or we did anyway, and I'm quite sure they are still doing it that way. You go through a series of mental exercises where you would initially learn how to turn off your physical senses, go within, and then learn how to function on your non-physical senses within these altered states. And
I would imagine that would facilitate a great amount of healing on many levels.
Oh, well, sure, yeah. And then below the alpha state, you have the theta state, which is, without question, the most important level of human consciousness.
How do you know if you're there?
Well, I used to tell people the best way to know if you are functioning in an altered state is by the things you can do, such as doing a physical reading. That's why, rather than have a whole bunch of EEG machines or biofeedback machines, which we did for a while, and then, you know, people would do them once, and they say, oh, okay, good, I can do it, and then they wouldn't do it again. So I was stuck with about a dozen of these little machines that we bought, and found out that turning a machine on or a light or a sound, to me, is not the important thing. What's important is what can you do when you're functioning within these levels? What changes can you bring about in your own life and the lives of the people around you? And to me, that's the most important thing there is.
Can you give us, tell me some success stories that you've had? I'd imagine there would be many.
Oh, Eva, come on. This is, people's lives are changed.
I ask you this because so many people don't believe us because they can't see it. So when we talk about it, you know, they don't believe us if they've never experienced it. So I want to inundate them with this is real. It really happened.
Well, I got a call one day from a woman in Florida, and she said, you know, I want to come up and take your class. And I said, why? I got a teacher down there. No, I want to come up. See, because I was lucky. I was the person at the right place at the right time. So all of the initial publicity that came out about all these mind programs, because I was in New York City, they wrote it about me. I was no different than anybody else, but I just happened to be there. So this woman said, no, I want to come up and take it with you. And she said, what floor are you on? And I said, the second floor, because my office and the Institute was right on the corner, actually two or three doors down from 48th Street and Fifth Avenue. And she said, do you have an elevator? And I said, yeah. She said, okay, my husband and I'll be up there. Well, she came up, and her name was Betty Meadows. And her husband's name was Alger Meadows, and they were from Dallas, Texas. And he said he was an oil man. I said, well, that's nice, you know, because we all use oil. And Betty was crippled with arthritis. She was not in a wheelchair, but she couldn't walk upstairs at all. So she came up and down the elevator. And they were delightful people. And I should have known something, because on 48th Street, there's no parking anywhere in Manhattan, you know, on the side streets. But there was a limo outside for 4 days, because my classes used to last for 4 days. And I figured, it's odd. His driver sits. And then one day, during lunch, he went downstairs. There was a kind of a private jewelry store, which you had to look through a peephole, and they, you know, would check you out. And if you had an appointment, they'd let you in. He came back, and she's wearing, he was so proud. He just bought his wife a $400,000 diamond ring. And I'm thinking, not bad.
Gosh.
And this is around 1969, so that diamond ring today would probably go for 10 times that. Anyway, after the class was over, we were all milling around, and, you know, for 8 years steady, and I taught 48 classes a year. Each class lasted 4 days, 16 to 18 hours a day, and on Wednesday I always had my opening lecture. So it was really, really focused on what we did. Anyway, Betty came out and she said, come here, I want to show you something. So she went out to the hallway outside, where we also had a stairwell. So we had the elevator and the stairwell, and she ran down the stairs and up the stairs, down the stairs and up the stairs. And she says, I haven't been able to walk upstairs in something, I don't know, like 12 years or so.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it was just incredible. Many, many, many healings like that. Self-healings, and then also the ability to bring, if you understand, physical changes in other people. And unless you're a doctor, you can't heal, but you can bring about physical changes.
Yeah, I was reading Marilyn Schlitt's book today, her new book.
I don't know that.
And she was talking about how science and medicine have got to merge into a more integrated medicine, because the science is leaving out the mind.
Yeah, right.
They're not taking that into consideration, and they were doing kinds of studies where people had skin rashes, called fish skin rashes, and it would make their skin look like fish. And so they didn't have any treatment for it. So they started teaching these people to go within themselves, and they would heal all of that fish skin disease on their skin simply by using their mind.
Sure.
But modern science was ignoring it because it wasn't something they could see.
See, this is what puts us so far behind, because we know for a fact that even back in the 60s, the Russians and the Eastern Bloc countries, they went under the premise that, okay, there is an ability and an energy out there. They call it psi energy, so whatever you call it. Their attitude was, even if we don't know what it is, let's see how many ways we can use it. Our science over here said, okay, we got to prove what it is before we can even begin to use it. And as a result, the Eastern Bloc countries are probably 25 or 30 years ahead of us.
That's right.
Oh, it's just unbelievable.
That makes me think of something else, talking about energy that we can't see, and that's scalar energy.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And these storms that we're having, and the earthquakes and floods. People don't believe me when I try to tell them about it. Have you had any experience with that in your guest?
Quite a few, yeah.
What are some of the stories you can share?
Well, I think one of the main things with our whole attitude of these storms last year and this year, and I've had scientists on and a lot of people who do know, and they say it's so obvious because if you look at the clouds and the formation of the clouds during these so-called hurricanes, they are not natural clouds. Sometimes they'll be square. And what do you think the chances are of having two hurricanes within a couple of weeks of each other go right down the same chute between southern Florida and Cuba and go right between the two of them without hitting any of them, cross over the tip of Florida, hit the Gulf, and within 2 hours go from a tropical storm up to a Category 3, and then just rise up from there, hurricane. And then actually be steered around the Gulf to hit all of our oil rigs and then hit the oil refiner. I mean, utterly impossible. Hurricanes don't take right-hand turns.
That's right. And another thing, isn't it ironic that those storms went to New Orleans, where we have that huge population of indigent people. Then it goes to Houston, where all those indigent people are being stored.
That's right.
Isn't there something ironic about that?
Ironic and a little scary. If you look at it even deeper, remember the people out of Louisiana and even Mississippi have been sent all over the United States to all the major cities. Well, now all of a sudden we have these different viruses. We have the different flu, like bird flu. And some of the reports coming back are saying the reason is the government wants to lock down travel, declare martial law, and they're going to say, hey, avian flu is so dangerous that we're going to have to quarantine basically the country because otherwise we could lose millions of people. And I think it's all contrived.
Well, I'm a channel, and I get things in my head that I know nothing about.
Uh-huh.
And I was channeling, and the thing that came through, it knocks on my head in the middle of the night about 3 o'clock in the morning. And I get up, and I go get my notebook, and I start writing, and it's saying, scalar energy and those electromagnetic waves up on the HARP unit, I don't know which one does which, but it causes changes in the earth to happen and causes things like the volcano magma to get hotter than it's supposed to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And it said that there were microorganisms that's been contained within the earth for, eons of time that respond to this heat. And when the heat comes out, then these microorganisms that's been stored for so long is also coming out. And I bet that's something people aren't thinking about when they say, and it's logical, wouldn't
sure.
you imagine?
Oh, yeah. You betcha.
And people are not thinking about it. I told my husband the day he was complaining about that storm. I said, well, what if I told you that that was a manufactured storm? He said, that's ridiculous. That couldn't happen. And I said, Tom Bearden had just happened the day before, sent me like this 5-page letter on how scalar energy works and how you can direct it. People don't believe that it's real. I mean, it's scientifically physics-based, and it happens every day, and people just don't believe it.
Boy.
Which brings up another thing, and that's subtle energies to our bodies and treatments of health and complementary medicine. I'm sure you've had quite an experience interviewing people about that on your show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What are some of the things you can share about that?
In what specific area?
Well, things that work, like Rife frequency equipment and Bob Beck's machine.
Yeah.
Subtle energy changing our whole electromagnetic field and the firing of neurotransmitters.
Sure. And there are many different ways. There are many, let's say, techniques out there. Some using machines, some using other type of mechanisms. But you're absolutely right. I mean, because every single cell in our body runs on electromagnetic impulses. Go ahead.
You know, I tell people all the time, you wouldn't stand in a metal fishing boat in a lightning storm, would you? And they go, of course not. And I said, well, then why do you not think that your thoughts are not powerful things, if they're electricity being conducted by water going across that synaptic gate? I don't understand why they think that that's not a powerful thing.
Absolutely. Not only that, and I forget which satellite it was, but it's one of the ones that have been out there for like 30 years. The amount of energy that, and it's still sending back pictures and data back to NASA, and it's been out there for, and it might be, I forget which one, but anyway, it has been out there for like 25 or more years. The amount of energy required to take the picture and the data and send it back to NASA is less than what the human body, the human brain, produces in energy. So there's an example of a tiny, tiny little bit of energy, and it's sending back, and I forget how many millions and millions of miles this thing, because it's outside of our solar system now, and it's still sending back data and pictures. Now, if that's the case, then don't you think that every time you have a thought or a feeling, that generates energy within your brain, and that energy then is being radiated out from you, and you are going to affect the entire universe.
Absolutely.
That's how powerful we are.
Well, you know, the HeartMath Research Institute is doing research right now on electromagnetic fields and heart, the stochastic resonances of the heart.
Sure.
And they say that field extends out 6 feet from your body. And they can measure it, and every time you have an emotion,
right,
it changes that electromagnetic field, and they can measure it.
That's right, sure.
So if it's measurable, and if it changes, and if you're standing 6 feet from someone else and they have a 6 foot electromagnetic field, it means it's got to cross, and it has to mean that your field changes their field, which is, to me, scientific proof that thoughts manifest the consciousness of the world.
Oh, sure.
Yep. I mean, it only seems logical to me.
Yeah, well, Dr. Bill Tiller, who used to be head of Stanford Research, now is doing, he calls himself retired, but he's working about his heart, and they are proving, scientifically proving, that your thoughts affect things, physical things, including biological things, and once you understand that, he says that now we can prove scientifically that humanity creates our own reality with our thinking process. And if people can begin to understand that and begin to use those concepts, they can begin to change their lives. Their lives for the better or for the worse. It's up to them.
They've got to accept first, though, that we live in a hologram so that they can understand that it really is changeable, that virtual reality of life, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, I do.
Which makes me think about something else. You know, 20 years ago, how many times did you see glioblastoma or astrocytoma brain tumors in people? Hardly ever.
That's right.
And most of those tumors right now are manifesting in what? Our children.
Uh-huh.
The majority of the glios right now are manifesting in children less than 11 years old. Wonder why that is. Could it possibly be because of all this electromagnetic energy that we have? Cell phones,
sure,
airplanes, you know. And then the first thing that happens when they get a glioblastoma is they put them in an MRI. They feed it food.
Right.
And why they do that, I don't have any idea.
You'd almost think, Eva, that it's done with full consciousness.
Why pharmaceuticals.
Right, right. Because they're the controlling factor in so many things that go on in the world today.
Pharmaceuticals. You know, there's a lot of bills out there in legislature. I sent some letters out to the governor and to President Bush the other day and said, what are you doing? You're taking away alternative and complementary medicine. You're doing it to your children. so that you, when they do get sick, you got to take them and get something cut out. Whereas if you would listen to us, there'd be nothing to cut out to begin with.
Absolutely.
It's money in their pockets.
Yeah. Many years ago, I knew, worked with, and participated in with a woman in Mexico City by the name of Pachita. She was a psychic surgeon, and it was an experience and a half. She used to use a hunting knife and operate on people.
And, really?
Oh yeah. And what was interesting is that the results, I don't care how she did it, it was bloody as can be. I mean, it was just, now I look back on it because it's so unreal, and you almost have to laugh. But one day we were sitting talking with her through her interpreter, because she was a full-blooded Aztec Indian. Oh, and she was also blind, which doesn't matter anyway.
Oh, that's amazing.
But we asked her one day, I said, you know, Pachita, are all the blood and guts necessary? And she said, no, of course not. But she said that the mind that created the disease in the first place, unless it sees something that it can accept, that disease is being removed, it will only recreate it again. And she says, and that's more true for people that live in North America than anywhere else in the world.
Because of our conditioning.
Right, exactly. And all the programming that we are constantly going through. And if people would only realize that your body doesn't reason, it has no reasoning mechanism whatsoever.
Well, and we don't have a thinking mechanism in our brain, you know? There's a binary processor, yes or no, on or off.
Right. Well, that's the key. So you either do the programming yourself or you accept the program from others. And the body goes right along with it. I mean, how many times, right around this time of year, and you begin to see ads on television that say, oh, flu season's here again, you better start to get your whatever the drug is.
Yeah.
And all these dopey people out there say, oh, yes, flu season, and they will come down with the flu.
I went to the grocery store the other day, and there was this huge line of people. It went all up and down the aisles and around the corner. And I thought, it was right when that hurricane was about to hit Houston. I thought, oh, my God, we're out of food. Or there's some of the, you know, food problems here. And I said, what is going on? And it was flu shots.
Oh,
you know, people have no idea what they're doing when they're getting a flu shot.
Oh, boy.
What is in that shot?
That's scary. That is really scary.
They think they're making themselves better, and really they're getting ingested with dead and living viruses of which they have no idea what they are. I actually went to the school the other day and told them they sent home a note saying I had to get immunizations for my children and refused to do it.
Good for you.
Because that's what's making cancers and lymphomas and and stuff like that, and people have no idea about that.
Ava, wait until the government comes out with this avian flu and that everybody is supposed to have a flu shot or a shot for, you know, the bird flu. I'm telling people right now, don't do it.
Or even more, when the chip comes out and you don't do what they say and your money gets turned off.
Yeah, right.
You know, I was talking to Daniel the other day about that chip. I hear it on the radio every day here in Atlanta. Put this chip in your children's hand in case they get lost so we can find them. The people have no idea what this is, what they're implementing. I mean, it's prophecy coming true. You know,
right down the line.
It's going to control your money. It's taking us to a one-world order. It's going to control your health, the way your medicine's implemented. You don't do what they like. Oh, that chip's not working anymore. You die. Well, it's not working because someone turns it off.
Boy, oh, boy.
Don't you think so?
Oh, yeah. I mean, what we are about to be faced with is so scary, and it's time that people began to wake up, take responsibility for their own lives, stand up and say, no more. It stops now. And then pull a Mahatma Gandhi.
You've had a little bit more experience than me. What do you suggest for people to do, Alex? Somebody's got to do something.
Yeah, I think just that. Number one, it's people's responsibility to educate themselves. Then once you learn what is truly happening, then what I think we should all do, and you got to get everybody to do it, otherwise it's not going to work, is to pull a Mahatma Gandhi. We all decide, it stops now, and everybody sit down. Now, the problem is most people won't, and those that do, they're not going to be able to stand the pressure. But the reason the governments around the world are what they are and as powerful as they are is because we, the people, empower them. We give them the power for them to do what they do to us. And until we decide, all of us decide, no more, it stops now, they're going to keep on doing it.
I agree. And I'll tell you something else, I think. I was talking to Daniel about this the other day, too. You know, Daniel got the visions of those boxes. And we were talking about the year 2012. Well, that was based on energy remaining the same because, you know, energy doesn't stop, it changes form.
Yeah.
I really believe, Alex, with the use of that scalar technology, its voltage at such a degree that it I don't know, maybe through electromotive force or something, but it changes the energy field so much, I believe it shortened the time by 2 years, and Daniel thinks so too. And so do some other people that I've talked to. So I believe now instead of it being 2012, which is going to be the cusp of the shift in consciousness, it's going to be more like 2010. So we don't have a whole lot of time, and people laugh at us, and like my husband, he called me a freak the other night because of the things that I believe. But it's real, and you can see it happening, the chips being implemented,
sure.
The plastic money, you know, Mondex owning the chip, Mondex being owned by MasterCard.
Yep.
Things are happening. Water being controlled. And I heard the other day, my friend Robin Quayle met this woman who was down in New Orleans when that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they locked up, I don't know this for a fact, this is just heard through the grapevine, but they said, this woman said they locked her up in a compound that was fenced in like she was a captive. And they kept her there for 3 days without giving them anything to eat or drink out in the sun, and she finally escaped, and they came and chased her down and put her back in there.
Oh, for crying out loud.
You know, what kind of democracy is that, and for why would they do that?
Maybe for practice. Because we know there's, at last report I had, which is several years ago, there was something like 172 or 175 of these internment camps around the country. And I would imagine it's probably up between at least 300 or more today.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And every once in a while, you'll see them. It'll look like a prison. We passed one the other day. There's one in southern Colorado. And you go around and ask the people in the area, what is that prison for? And they say, what prison? They are not even aware of it.
That's frightening.
Oh, yeah, it sure is.
I'll tell you something else, and I know this to be a fact. This other friend of mine lives down in Mobile, and she's the director at this big funeral home. I think she said they were like one of the largest in the country.
Huh.
So she's responsible for burying all these dead people down there. And when they were reporting, when the newspapers and the television was reporting that there were 500 dead, I'm sure it's much more now. She said, Eva, it's a lie. We have 10,000 bodies here.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
And that's, is she
and
in
that
Louisiana?
Was, you know, a month ago.
Yeah, right. Oh, my gosh.
They're covering it up and nobody's paying attention.
Wow.
You know, and the Red Cross was sitting on the bridge going into New Orleans with food and water, and they wouldn't let them in. Why is that?
You got to go.
You know
back
more than me. Come on, Alex.
Well, again, I go back to the fact that you know this. The whole thing may have been just as an exercise to see how to do it, to see how much they could push people. I mean, they took families and they spread people all over the United States in an area that they didn't have to, because these people would have been almost fine if they just moved up a little further north. But my feeling is it was done once to see how far the people can be pushed before they begin to rebel. Well, they pushed them all the way. Nobody rebelled.
Yeah, I think one of the problems with our country is we react slowly to subtle problems.
Uh-huh.
It has to slap us in the face first.
Yeah.
So that the powers that be are enacting these things very slowly so that we don't notice that it's happening. I talked to George Green the other day, and he told me that the Arabs just took out 300, and, or the Iranians, somebody over there, just took out $375 billion out of our economy. Has anybody told anybody about that?
Well, I haven't heard about it. Read it in the newspapers.
I haven't seen it.
No.
So, you know, wouldn't if that's true, which I believe, George, about it, if that's true, wouldn't it be wise for them to advise us so we can do something to prepare our families for it?
Absolutely. And, you know, look at Chavez down in Venezuela, and he pulled out money. And I mean, it's happening all over the world, but this government of ours, it's like Clinton. They would rather lie than tell you the truth, even if the truth is more beneficial to them. They would rather lie just to be able to lie. I mean, it's almost a psychopathic personality, and that's our country today.
Well, that's scary.
It sure is.
It really is.
Well, again, I go back. Then when are the people of the world going to say, enough is enough, we don't empower you anymore, it's done here, and sit down?
You know, the people have got to take it upon themselves. Everybody has to talk. I was going to do a show on going randomly around the streets and say, what is God to you?
Sure.
You know, if you could say one, and I did. I went to the homeless shelters. I went to the street vendors. I just went to random people. And most of them, I'd say 7/10 of them, didn't believe there was a real God. One of them would think that God was a man sitting up on a throne.
Huh.
And one of them, I said, well, if you could say one thing to that you thought would or could change the world, what would that be?
Yeah.
And they would tell me whatever they thought it was.
Okay.
Well, what would it take to get you to do that? And they'd just look at me. Well, what can I do? I'm just one person.
Yeah.
You know, well, we're one person. Oprah Winfrey's one person. We're doing something.
That's right.
People have to take a responsibility to do something.
Well, Eva, just go back over all of human history, and every great movement, every advancement of mankind has not been spearheaded by a committee or a group. It's been spearheaded and started by a single individual with a belief and a desire to make change. So every single one of us has the ability and the power to change the course of human history.
That's right. Through thought alone, if nothing else, spend some time meditating, because it's a known fact that electricity is a powerful thing. So if you think that thought, it's going to do something, whether you realize it or not.
Right.
It's not inhibited by that bone in your skull. Go somewhere, you know. That lightning bolt's not inhibited by that metal fishing boat.
That's right. You betcha. Yeah.
Don't you think so?
Yeah, and it's every single one of us. Not only has the ability, we have the responsibility.
That's right.
Yeah, of actually making changes. Let's get something going that is going to benefit not only ourselves but our families and all of humanity itself.
That's what makes me think about another thing, and that's alternative fuel mechanisms. You know, I really don't believe we're going to be warring over oil, because we have too many alternative energy sources available.
Sure.
The oil's about the money. What I think we're going to be warring over is water. You know, we're 70-something percent water, ironically
right.
The same percentage as the Earth. Does that tell you something?
Absolutely. And you know, food is probably the next.
Yeah, and genetically modified seed. I just can't get that out of my mind either.
That's disgusting, isn't it?
You know, you've got to think, and if you have a seed and you plant it, it should grow.
Right.
If it doesn't grow, what do you think that's going to do in your body? If something's wrong with it so it can't grow, what is it going to do when you put it in your body?
Sure. I mean, if we are what we eat, and we're eating things that are basically impotent because they can't reproduce themselves, then that's exactly what's going to happen to our bodies.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And we're doing nothing about it.
Nope. No.
Not one thing. When Monsanto sued that farmer for his seeds cross-pollinating their seeds that wouldn't grow.
Percy Schmeiser is his name, up in Canada.
That's right.
And I've had Percy on a couple of times, and that's such a sad story, I can't believe it. And it shows you that even the Canadian Supreme Court are all bought and paid for. I mean, there's nothing but a bunch of crooks.
It's sick.
Yeah.
You know, why would a company sue somebody, a little farmer, for having seeds that actually work? if it weren't for just money in their pocket. They don't care about these people out here in the world. And we obviously don't care. We'd be doing something about it. Our children are going to live in a trash dump.
Yeah. Well, did you know that Percy and his wife lost everything they had? They were allowed to keep their house. They lost their farm. They lost, I think it's 50 years of research in developing the best strain of, and I'm not sure what the crop was, but he never used any Monsanto seeds. Even his neighbor admitted that he drove by, and he's sure that some blew off as he was taking the seeds to market, and that's what they found on the Schmeiser farm. And yet the courts ruled against him, and they lost everything.
That just makes me sick. It really does.
Sad situation. But Monsanto also made a deal with the government, and all the farmers over in Iraq, they have to use Monsanto's genetically modified seeds. They can't use the naturally pollinated seeds.
That just amazes me.
Yep. Well, it goes back again, Eva. When are people going to say enough is enough? They're going to stand up and say it stops here now.
Well, I guess it's going to be up to people like us, Alice, to get out there and scream and yell and stomp our feet. I assume the government will be on my doorstep one day.
I'm sure of that, but it'll probably be after they come and get me. You know, they'll
excuse me, I always say, I won't be surprised if I wake up dead one morning.
Yeah, right. And I'm quite sure I'm on their red list.
I'm sure you are, because you're vocal.
Yeah, because the red list means you don't go to one of the internment camps to be reprogrammed, and you are not left alone. Red means just what it sounds like. Red means it's all over, pal,
That's because
we're such loudmouths, you know.
It means you're one of those people out there trying to do good in the world, actually, is what it is.
Oh, golly.
And so, Alex Merkinger.
Yes, ma'am.
I just want to thank you for who you are.
Hey, you're a sweetheart, and I thank you, too, for what you're doing and having me on the show and for coming on my show, too.
Thanks for having me. My book's going to be ready this week, so I'm going to be sending it to you.
And we'll talk about it, too, and I'll get you on, and let's spread the word.
Because my book's going to be focused at the fundamentalists. You know, it's channeled. It's not in my words. And if the fundamentalists can't understand this book, we're going to be in trouble.
I'm with you, Eva. Thanks so much.
Thank you, honey, and give my regards to your lovely wife.
I will do that. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.